Die USA werden in der BRD oft als ein sehr konservatives Land wahrgenommen. Zwischen Schusswaffenwahnsinn, sehr aktiven Abtreibungsgegnern, außer Rand und Band predigenden Evangelikalen, Trumpsche Außenpolitik und tausend anderen Dingen, auf die Westeuropäer oft ein wenig verstört reagieren, vergisst man aber schnell, dass dieses Land mit seinen rund 300 Millionen Einwohnern auch auf eine reiche Geschichte an Widerstand, progressiven Ideen und radikalen Akteuren und Akteurinnen zurückblicken kann. Und dass diese Geschichte natürlich auch noch weitergeht. Selbst für Menschen, die sich für radikale Geschichte interessieren, mag es jedoch überraschend sein, dass an der Universität von Ann Arbor, einem kleinen Städtchen nahe Detroit, eine große Sammlung über Anarchismus, radikale Politik und Minoritätsgemeinschaften besteht. Das hat mich natürlich sehr stark interessiert und ich freue mich, dass ich heute die Gelegenheit habe, mit der Kuratorin, also der Leiterin der Liberty Collection, so der Name der Sammlung, ein Gespräch zu führen. Die Leiterin Julie Harada ist mir jetzt per Internettelefonie zugeschaltet und ich werde sie auf Englisch über einige Aspekte der Kollektion, aber auch über den aktuellen Stand radikaler Politik in den USA ausfragen. First of all, welcome, Julie. Good to have you.
Thank you.
Julie, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today about this fascinating collection. And maybe you could start by explaining what we can actually find in the Liberty Collection. Are there only books or is there something else?
No, there's many other formats besides books. We have periodicals, we have serials, broadsides, posters, flyers, leaflets, political buttons, photographs, even a few t-shirts and memorabilia, banners and signs, and just all kinds of things that you could relate to protest movements.
That sounds really like loads of interesting material. And who is allowed to consult that? Can anybody with an interest in radical history just drop by, or how does it work?
Yes, anybody who wants to look at it can look at it. We are open to the public as a public institution, but we do require that you use the materials in a monitored reading room, just like everyone here. Anyone who has U of M credentials, Michigan credentials, or anyone from the public can come and look at the materials that we have here.
It might be unfair to single out one or two things, but from the whole range that you as a curator are aware of in the collection, could you kind of zoom in on one or two really interesting or outstanding, well, books or buttons or zines that you have there? What's there? What's special maybe?
Oh, well, it's hard to pick because I feel like everything we have is of equal importance. But the Liberty Collection has its foundation in anarchism. So everything related to the anarchist movement is very important and something that we look for and collect here. And so it goes back to the 19th century. And some of the materials we have are quite old. So those are things that are fragile and delicate, and we try to take very good care of. And some of the early materials we have, we feel like they're very special. So some of the newspapers that you can't find anymore because they're so fragile and brittle, they just didn't last through the decades and the centuries. So some of those materials I think are very important because we take very good care of them. And you know, I can't really pinpoint one item in the collection that is my favorite, but we do have quite unique, valuable materials here. I don't know if any of your listeners might be aware of one of the most famous anarchists in the world, Emma Goldman, who was a Russian immigrant to the United States in the late 19th century. But we happen to have her Russian passport that she used when she was deported from the United States in 1918 and returned to Russia after violation of the Wartime Espionage Act. So that's one of the, you know, it's just an example of some of the unique materials we have here.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned newspapers and rare books. Do they cover the Detroit, Ann Arbor area, northern part of the United States, whole of the United States? What languages do you have? Could you kind of give us a grasp there on what's there? Are there maybe folky also on certain time periods or movements?
Well, so the Labadie collection is international in scope. So, and I think that's largely in part to the foundation of anarchism, as I mentioned earlier, because the anarchist movement is, of course, worldwide and it does not recognize geographical boundaries. So we have materials from all over the world and in many languages. And yes, broadly, it focuses on Europe and the United States. And Western European languages, but we have also materials in Arabic and other and in Asian languages as well. So we even have newspapers from immigrant communities in the United States, including a lot of German language newspapers published in the United States in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, where we had a lot of German immigrants.
Right, I'm thinking about August Spies and the Haymarket Affair and whatnot. So, is that also the time period when the Labadie collection, or the exhibits in the collection, start? You mentioned before that it starts in the 19th century. So, could you talk a bit about the history of that collection? How come that anarchists started a collection at a university?
Well, so Joseph Labadie was the founder of the collection, and he was an anarchist and a labor organizer from Michigan. And he was born in a small town, but then he eventually moved to Detroit and started a print shop there, a printing press. And because he was involved in the anarchist movement, and he was born in 1850, so his adulthood from the 1870s until his death in the 1930s, he was very active in the labor and the anarchist movement. And at that time, there were many, many immigrants from around the world. And he was friends and colleagues with many of the German immigrants from that time period. And so he was collecting the materials from those movements, and also publishing some of the writings in his own newspapers. So in about 1911, he started to think about where he might want to place his collection, because he knew that it was very valuable for history and for research. And it wasn't anything that any libraries already had. So he chose the University of Michigan as the home for it because of his geographic location. It was near him, so he would have a chance to visit if he wanted to. And that's how the Labadie collection was started, through the donation of his own materials that he collected and created throughout his lifetime. And then it just grew from there to include many more social protest movements throughout the years and all the way to the present. So one of the first curators of the Labadie collection, her name was Agnes Inglis. While she was involved with the anarchist movement and the labor movement in her own way, and she started to spend time volunteering in the library after the collection was already established here, and starting to collect more materials and filling in the gaps of the historical record, and then also moving forward into the contemporary movements.
So when you mention the contemporary movements, that obviously means that the collection is not a historical collection as such, but it keeps growing, you keep incorporating material. Who are the people that bring material to the collection? Or even is that the case that people bring their material to the collection? Do you have funds to acquire, let's say, posters or whatever? How does it work that you can incorporate new material into the Labley collection?
Yes, so the collection is by no means stagnant, and that was the result of somebody, Agnes Inglis, as I mentioned earlier, coming into the collection and building on it and adding to it, and the value that was eventually placed on it. Because in the beginning, the university didn't see the value of it, although they did actually accept the donation
Which is an
and kept
interesting
it.
fact, right? So we're talking about the late 19th century, early 20th century, when a university in the US accepts the donation from an anarchist of anarchist material and related stuff, right?
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah, so the Board of Regents here accepted the donation, but they really didn't know what to do with it at that time in 1911 or 1912. So they just kept it. They didn't really process it or catalog it or make it accessible, but they didn't throw it away either. So It took somebody's ingenuity, Agnes Inglis, to come along and volunteer her time to spend, you know, the rest of her life cataloging and processing and making it more accessible, or at least getting to know it well enough so that she could help other people who were coming to look for materials. And then she added more to it. So I actually forget what your question was.
Well, yeah, the question, before I interrupted you, sorry for that, was that the way how it works, that new material arrives at the collection, are you going to protest movements and snatch some posters, or do you go to book fairs and then take some books to the collection, or are there activists bringing their stuff? How does it work?
Yes. So we acquire materials in all of those different ways. And one of them is to have people donate their materials who are activists and have collected materials. And a lot of people who are activists maybe don't collect materials and throw them away, but other people do collect them and keep them safe. And those are the people that come to us and want them to be preserved because they spent their time and their life working on collecting this material and going to demonstrations and rallies and protests and meetings. So those people often come to us with material to donate. We also, and sometimes I go to those things myself and pick up materials to donate to the collection, or if I'm out and I see a flyer or somebody hands me something, I collect it for inclusion in the Labadie collection. And we also do have a budget where, just like the rest of the University of Michigan Library receives funds for purchase of materials for the library, we also receive funds for purchase of materials in the library. Currently, our regular acquisitions budget is close to $50,000 per year. And so I can use that money to purchase anything I want for the collection. We also have the use of trust funds that are set up in for various types of acquisitions. Sometimes they're very strict and you can only use them for certain kinds of things or certain languages. So a lot of the used book dealers and rare book dealers around the country, even around the world, I work with on a regular basis to help. They help me find things that we don't already have, and they go out and collect them, and then we purchase from them.
Maybe just to pinpoint that again, we have mentioned various times that it's a collection about anarchism and anarchists, about radical politics and movements. What does that include? Does that include the labor movement as well, black activism, Native American? What's the scope, so to say? Or are there any exclusions? Or would you say that on a, let's say, theoretical level, everything could be interesting? It really depends on the budget and the things that arrive, which is included.
Well, it's pretty much up to me as the curator what I want to collect and what I want to include. But I do have 100 years of history to kind of guide me in where I want to take the collection. So there's, of course, everything anarchist, and that's pretty broad and goes all over the world. But we also have the labor movement. So we do collect some materials on the earlier labor movement of the 19th and early 20th centuries. But because there's a very big labor archive not far away from us, about 40 miles down the road, they already collect a lot of the union papers and things like that. So I don't try to do too much in labor because there's already somebody doing it. And then we have a large collection of pacifist materials, and those are mostly the anti-war movements of the Vietnam War, but we also collect all wars. So World War I, World War II, and the Gulf War, and the recent wars in Afghanistan. So so we continue to collect pacifist movements, as well as any youth movements or social protests and campuses. And also we have civil liberties movements. So not only civil rights, which is a very broad area of collecting for us, but we also have, censorship and rights in academia, free speech, things like that. We have a large collection of the Black Liberation Movements, the Black Panthers, and we also have National Liberation Movements from the Native Americans.
So the scope is really, really wide there. So really, as you say, it really depends on the people working there. You definitely who take a look at the material and decide to include it or not, right?
Right, right.
You just mentioned like a partner institution that is into labor history. So that there are obviously different collections throughout the world. Are you aware of any other collection or institution that focuses on the same things? Maybe even here in Germany, do you know of any or do you have any links to German, well, archives, universities, or even like private persons collecting into this in the same range that you are interested in?
I don't think so. I don't think there's anyone in Germany that I'm in contact with that I have any links or I don't know of any institutions in Germany. There must be, but there's not necessarily any connections. There is a place in Amsterdam, the International Institute of Social History, mm-hmm. That has a lot of parallel collections with ours. They have a strong anarchist collection and social movements as well. So they're pretty widely known, and there is a little bit of collaboration sometimes between us, and there's a few places around the U.S. But for the most part, but it's not there's not a lot of collaborations with other institutions.
Which also means that the Labadie is quite unique in its scope, right? That it really focuses on anarchism and these radical protest movements. Am I right?
Yes,
there?
And another one I didn't get a chance to mention is LGBT movements. So we are very strong in lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender research materials of all kinds, and that's one of our biggest collecting areas. That wasn't really started until about the 1960s, but even then, we were one of the first institutions collecting that kind of material.
Right. Maybe to wrap up here, I found it interesting what you mentioned that people, activists, come to the collection and donate their material, donate their papers and whatnot. So I gather that there is quite a certain connection between activists and the collection. So the collection serves as, let's say, a meeting point or a transfer point to get people together or to start things. And you also mentioned that sometimes you or other people from the collection are at certain events and then gather material there, which then brings me to let's say the final question here. If we take a step, let's say, back from the collection and take a look to the wider panoramic view of politics of the United States now, I'm not asking you about politics as such, but about the radical movements, specifically anarchism, nowadays in 2017, going into 2018, also with all the material that you have, that you are aware of in the collection, what would you say, how is anarchism today in the United States? Is it alive and kicking? Is it moribund? How is it? Because here in Germany, we have very often a certain idea about what anarchism is. In the US, I know it's quite different. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that, also with a historical perspective, if that's not asked too much. So maybe you could dip into that question. What is anarchism today? How is it in the United States?
Well, that is an interesting question because I think it's changed quite a lot over the last 100 years since we've been collecting. And, you know, the movement itself has changed. It's more diverse in the sense that there's anarchism with a lot of extra adjectives. So you can be eco-anarchist or you can, you know, be any different kind of anarchist. So it's really spread out into different movements. So the ideas of anarchism are diffused in a lot of different movements that hadn't been either didn't exist before or there was, you know, barriers for them. So a lot of the ideals of anarchism now you can see in other movements. And that's interesting for me because it broadens the scope even more, the scope of the Labadie collection. If I see something about a a social movement that I can relate to. You know, they're doing something more along the lines of anarchism, like they have consensus decision making or direct action or mutual aid or something like that within their their movement, then that's something that I want to include in the Labadie collection. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I guess so. So that really means that anarchism and radical politics obviously has changed a lot and has taken different roads, so to say, and the Labadie keeps open for all these different ways and strands that are developing, right? Maybe what comes to my mind, although I said it has already been the final question, but I've got one more addendum here. What about media types? I mean, we were talking about posters and books and fanzines. What about social movements nowadays? They are going digital. Are you collecting digital material as well? Is there any possibility to collect that? Twitter feeds or whatnot? Or is that something where the collection simply has to say we have to store that somewhere, but we cannot really archive that? That's for maybe a different institution. How do you go about with these new, or maybe not so new technologies, digital technologies?
Yeah, we are not actually collecting any digital technologies right now, only because it's really not possible to collect them in the same way that we collect the tangible artifacts of social movements. So all of the online stuff, we don't have a way to store that, and more importantly, we don't have a way to make it accessible. So one of the things that we do here is provide access to all of this valuable, rare material that wouldn't exist otherwise, but we can't do that with digital because it's just not possible for us within the framework of the how do I want to say it? It's well, for one thing, legally, we wouldn't be able to make it accessible if we stored it, and then we can't provide access to it because of copyright.
So there we've got a conundrum of the anarchist collection at a university, right? So there, university and copyright laws apply, right?
Exactly, yeah. And that because we're part of a big institution, we are bound by some of the regulations and policies that they have to abide by because of being sued and, you know, being susceptible to lawsuits and things like that. But on the other hand, we might not have existed if we weren't part of this bigger institution, because it takes a lot of time and resources and money to just preserve this material, let alone provide access to it. So there's, you know, pros and cons both ways.
Right. So thank you very much again, Julie, for talking with us about the Labadie collection today. Thanks a million there.
Thank you.
And that was Julie Harada, curator of the Labadie collection at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And we had a chat about this fascinating collection and all different ways how radical politics are archived at a university. Well, thanks again, Julie.
Thank you.